This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with my colleague Gregory Copley, a native Australian, Australian national. I have a series of photographs that were taken when Queen Elizabeth and her husband, Prince Philip, arrived in Australia for the first visit. Quite spectacular, traveling in Brisbane, Sydney, Canberra. It was a big, big hit. And the king, her son, is now headed to Australia. Gregory tells me he'll be there by the 18th. To accomplish what, Gregory?
Well, basically to help reinforce the role of the Crown and its duties of the Crown in Australia, bearing in mind that King Charles is not just, as Americans like to call him, the King of England. He's actually the King of the United Kingdom, but he's also separately and legally the King of Canada, the King of Australia, and the King of New Zealand under the different laws of those countries. And he has obligations to show himself and to help unite the country in Australia. Because of his health, he has been restricted lately from a lot of the international travel. So this trip will only take him to Sydney and Canberra. I remember fully the first visit of Queen Elizabeth and Prince Philip to Australia after she came to the throne. And that was before she was legally Queen of Australia, but I was in Perth when that royal visit occurred, and there was a massive outpouring on the streets of every city. There will still be a huge outpouring in Sydney and Canberra, and even the Republicanist Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, has abandoned all hostility and is basically seeing this as a high point of his remaining days in office, when he is going to be welcoming the King and Queen for this visit. And they will talk about things close to the Australian's heart, like healthcare issues and so on, which the King is clearly a spokesman for in this day and age. The visit's going to be short. It doesn't include all the Australian state capitals. It doesn't include New Zealand. And as we discussed last week, the New Zealand women's rugby team were in London, so the King, knowing that he wasn't going to New Zealand, invited them all to Buckingham Palace, and then all of the women rugby players mobbed him in a scrum to hug him, and the King was clearly delighted with this very unroyal diplomatic situation, and that went down a treat in New Zealand and basically got him off the hook for not having to being able to visit New Zealand. But he will then go up from Australia after this trip to Samoa for the Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting, and that is absolutely critical, bringing the Commonwealth together, because he is the head of the Commonwealth, as negotiated by Queen Elizabeth at the Perth Chogham in, I think, 2011, when she negotiated all the Commonwealth Heads of Government agreed to accept then Prince Charles as the next leader of the Commonwealth. And he takes that role very seriously. He is very popular in the South Pacific, but throughout the Commonwealth. So these are critical times for him, just as he's doing domestically in Britain. I mean, he just, in the last days, went to Scotland to address the Scottish Parliament on its 25th anniversary as a separate parliament in the UK, and reaffirmed in no uncertain terms his and his family's and the Crown's love of Scotland as part of the United Kingdom, and really worked on rebuilding the ties between England and Scotland and Wales and Northern Ireland, largely because politics has been allowed to fracture that internal relationship within the British Isles over recent years. And he has rebuilt that single-handedly. The Queen did as well. But Prince Charles has been much more dynamic, restoring and bringing to the fore the particular Scottish attributes of the United Kingdom monarchy. And the fact that he actually took the throne name of Charles when the first two Charles, Charles I and Charles II, were of the Stuart line, and they were therefore Scottish in their origin. So, you know, he's been highly conscious of this, and he does love Scotland. There's no question about it. His whole childhood evolved around his presence in Scotland.
A detail. There's a throne room, or used to be, in Buckingham. I believe there's one, or used to be, in Windsor. Is there a throne for him in Australia?
Not technically, and neither is there an Australian crown or a New Zealand or a Canadian crown. And in my book in 2007 called Australia 2050, I suggested that that they need to have a throne and a crown.
We have 30 seconds.
For the king. Yeah, for the king or the sovereign in Australia and in Canada and New Zealand. And that's now being revived. That talk is now being revived. And I was in Canada until yesterday, again, talking about that with some of the monarchists in Canada.
Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, teaching me, a former colonial, how it is that the king unites all these far-flung sovereignties.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.